President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints tonight on BBSRadio.com. This is D-Day, June the 6th, also the meeting of the Bilderberg Group in Chantilly, Virginia. The media event that the mainstream media refuses to cover. This is where we have 125 high-level elite of the Illuminati, kings and queens and presidents and political figures and people related to international military organizations, all meeting, deciding the fate of the rest of the world. It's a time of year to be totally disgusted with what's going on, and I won't give it much more attention than it deserves, other than to point out that, of course, you're not hearing anything on the mainstream media. We may talk about this a bit with tonight's guest. Before I bring tonight's guest on board, I would like to read something to you. I don't do this too often, but this is kind of interesting, and it's going to open up a very interesting topic tonight. There's an individual who is part of the disclosure movement. His name is Ed Komarek, and Ed has been publishing a lot of really revealing information that has been kept from us. It's in the face of NASA, it's in the face of the Pentagon, the shadow government, and all the secret governments around the world who refuse to acknowledge the fact that people are seeing thousands of UFOs all over the planet every day. Now it's increased tremendously, the number of sightings. Some of them belong to us, some of them belong to aliens, but Ed Komarek has been one of the foremost people. He's had his hands on documents. In fact, he admits that he's stolen documents to bring them forward to show people this is not a fiction. And he is on the run, basically, for his life, because they certainly would like to silence him. And he got an affidavit from a man who evidently recently died. This gentleman's name was Robert Kottner, and Mr. Kottner basically gave a deathbed type of confession describing things that occurred in his experience as a CIA agent and having a very high security clearance. He describes many things in this piece, but for sake of brevity, I'm going to only share about half of it with you. And this was posted on exopolitics.blogspot.com, May of 2008. So this is very recent that this information came out. He says, now I'm quoting Ed Komarek, in a first long letter, Mr. Kottner describes himself as CIA, NSA, low-level, black bag covert field agent. At times, he says he worked under Admiral Bobby Inman and had a high-level contact with Wackenhut Corporation that he never used. He says he worked under G. Gordon Libby, and I think he meant to write Liddy, known as someone associated with Watergate and Richard Nixon. At other times, he did not know who he worked for. There is more information in his letters on extraterrestrial and terrestrial affairs, but for now, it's enough of a hassle to just transcribe the following long affidavit. Some of the information explains how to make very dangerous devices and poisons from common household products that should not be openly circulated. Robert commented on handheld radiation devices that can covertly kill or cause physical and mental damage. There is also a detailed discussion on how to create fake IDs and identities that are part of basic CIA training. This affidavit was written on a prison typewriter with many misspellings and other errors, some that I have corrected. I have made some other slight alterations for better reading, like changing the way CIA and NSA is written to read more appropriately like it's written today. I'm sort of improvising the last line because you can't see what's on this document unless you're online looking at it. The document in the affidavit is as such. Now I'm quoting Robert Kottner. I, Robert E. Kottner, born 3/19/46, SS number 441-444447, military number RA 25731405, NG 25731405, and MK Ultra CIA number 1059, Tulsa, private investigator number 1059, until 1979, do hereby swear under oath that the following is true and correct to the best of my memory, and that this should be accepted as a deathbed statement, because I am dying and may be murdered even before I can die of other causes. MUFON UFO Journal, official publication of the Mutual UFO Network since 1967. That's odd. I just read it, and in 1967, I had just gotten my private investigator's license in Tulsa, Oklahoma, number 1059, and was contacted by the FBI. I went into the Army in 1963, and the CIA in 1964, and I left the CIA and FBI in 1972. I was, among other things, involved in part of the MK Ultra project, and as such, I saw my first UFO at Edwards Air Force Base in 1964, the saucer from Roswell, with letters of a 4,000-year-old language on its controls, which I can duplicate. There are at least three different types of UFOs I have personally seen, and three different races that built them. From 1967, when I decided to get out of the CIA, I started stealing copies of top-secret files and records on many different subjects, including UFOs, and those stolen files are still hidden where I put them. Tesla, before he was murdered, invented most of the devices now part of the Star Wars, and a lot of it is in space right now. I maintain my informational contacts in intelligence and etc. up until 1990, so that is the newest date I can give you. I would prefer to be asked direct questions I can answer with a yes or no answer. Tulsa, Oklahoma, cable TV channel 3 in 1986 had me on The Days Show for an interview about my past CIA work, and they still maintain a tape of it. I still know right now how to access secret files of five governments on UFOs. The things I know about government secret projects will get you put in prison or killed, as it has me. Deep cover clandestine projects operations is what I mostly did, usually. The people in charge of these secret government projects do not argue any moral rights or wrongs. Justice and fair play never enter into their acts. Some ETs have already interbred with humans. These beings are multidimensional capable. Our government employs them in many different fields, including UFOs, and their ancestors came here in UFOs through warps in the dimensions. Our government has duplicated some warp devices. These beings have overwhelming natural talents, including psychic. Legends tell us about them. While I was with the CIA, I was sent many places, including Russian ones. All these people should remember me. Semyon Kurlyan and his aura photos that lead part of the way to research on dimensional warps. Krasnodar, Dr. Gennady on bioenergy research and powered weapons. Dr. Felix Ziegel showed me secret Russian UFOs and UFO documents, including captured World War II German ones on Atlantis and UFOs and Professor Pushkin's on gravitational waves from living systems, all before 1972, when I had personally examined or stole copies of documents proving our and Russian joint projects on UFOs since 1917. I saw three different types from three different races, one of which was multidimensional, and in 1979 in China Lake Naval Base, I saw the last one. Our government works with one race only. U.S. senators who have been in Congress more than 4 years are directly or indirectly involved in a conspiracy to prevent the public from finding out the truth, and they will harm you if you get too close to the truth. Some UFO government projects are financed by illegal drug manufacturing, importation, and sales in the U.S. today. Since 1964, any UFO investigator who got or gets too close to the truth has or will disappear or be placed in prison, an accident resulting in their death, and any attempt to present any evidence to politicians will result in actions of this nature if it contains any truth, because harassment or intimidation is not done by real people involved in the real projects. The second type, from a different race, UFO I saw, was at a mountain complex owned by Dow in Tennessee or Georgia Mountains, and the third type, from a third race, I saw in Colorado Secret Chemical Warfare Center. The top secret U.S., German, and Russian files from 1917 to 1990 that I saw and stole certain copies of clearly show UFO evidence going back 13,000 years and completely destroys all established religious bases and most of society's ideals. And that is one reason the government cannot release those records and files to the public. I do know one man who knows more than I do, has seen more than me, and has stolen originals as well as copies of original files and evidence, and is now traveling in hiding in the U.S. as a homeless person because of it. He can draw from memory many things I can only identify after I see them again. At present, only 100 people really run this government. The people do not and cannot, nor will they ever be allowed to. Further, this affidavit saith not, except that I have not much longer to live and that my abilities to spell, write, and in other areas gets worse each day. Former U.S. Senator Bartlett and U.S. Speaker Carl Albert, I once worked for on a special project, signed Robert E. Kottner, sworn to and subscribed to me this third day of March 1993. Now, the notary was an unreadable signature, and the notary's commission expired 2/19 of 97. Ed Kamark felt that this message should get out and sent this in May of 2008. With that, I'd like to introduce tonight's guest. He is our weekly Friday night guest and has been on Evident Footprints since it began a year ago. And his name is Jim Murray. Jim, how are you this evening?
I'm fine, Don. That was quite a way to open the show. A very shocking and very interesting document you read there.
I have to apologize for the bad language, but that was an individual whose mind was falling apart. So,
mine had fallen apart, but the message is pretty clear.
Mm-hmm. How does it strike you? Knowing what
well,
you know.
Well, actually, I have been involved in a peripheral way in investigating a lot of this stuff since I was 18 years old. And so it isn't like any of the stuff that you mentioned is entirely new to me. You know, you pick things up over the years, people tell you things, you hear things, you read things, etc. What's interesting about it is most of what he said has a truthful ring to it. And the idea that one of these races has interbred with us already is not a surprise either. To compound the issue, I have heard many times from numerous sources that the United States government has actually traded the right for various alien races, if you want to use that word, to experiment genetically and medically with people of this planet in return for technological secrets. And, you know, that has a true ring to it because it's just low enough on the scale of things to be very plausible.
Mm-hmm. Well, I find it interesting in that I read this probably about a half an hour before tonight's show, and I thought, what immaculate timing, number one, to get this. And then there are several references to things that I have been saying. In particular, I was totally unaware of this letter, and here someone refers to Tesla's murder, and as you well know, I wrote about that over a year ago. As far as I know, I'm the first journalist to actually write that Tesla was murdered. And
yeah, I
described
on that right away, of course.
Yes. Though he's not specific about the details, here we have someone just flat out say everything else you and I have talked about, the Star Wars technology has to be Tesla technology. Who else could have invented all that besides yourself? So,
well, don't put me on too high a pedestal. I might fall and hurt myself. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that I used to be very resentful over the fact that Thomas Edison, who, while I don't want to take anything away from the abilities that he did have, was practically a bumpkin compared to the intellectual prowess exhibit by Tesla. And yet, he's the one that gets front page billing in all the history books, and Tesla doesn't. And originally, my attitude toward that was one of total injustice. But, you know, as I matured and thought about the thing in a different light, one of the other thoughts that occurred to me was that maybe he's played down in the history books simply because of the fact that the secret government has so much of his stuff, maybe even stuff that that we are not aware of. And so they don't want the general public rooting around in that direction, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Tesla was a non-entity when I was in school. Even in college, he was a non-entity. So you would have to presume that that the stories about Alexander Graham Bell and Edison and Benjamin Franklin were intended to keep us in the dark ages scientifically, and it was only those that might have secretly advanced to the higher technological schools related to the military-industrial complex that would ever be exposed to that more advanced science. You yourself were very fortunate. And
I think I had guidance, to be honest with you, because even now, from the vantage point that I stand at, I often marvel at how easy it is to redirect, especially if you're in charge of the educational system and what have you, the thinking of people so that they don't see what's right under their nose. It's really amazing. And I think I've told you in the past as well that when I have literally demonstrated various energy technologies to people who have very solid credentials from academia, the result is just a glazed look in the eye and a tilt sign lighting up on their foreheads. And it's like, you know, they can't accept it or won't accept it or whatever. And, you know, the strangest thing about all of that is that the real definition of science, you know, is an unbiased seeking of truth in any field. And, you know, why should that attitude be so encumbered with programming unless they want people to remain ignorant of certain things?
Well, yes. I think they want us to be ignorant of the fact that there are things out there that don't require as much money. And they would rather keep us in the, as I use the term, the dark ages, so that they can keep on collecting the money. It's a simple matter. It's always been an issue of money. We have much higher technology, as you've many times pointed out, and there's absolutely no justification for us being entrapped in this oil cartel thing, other than that they decided that that's going to be the currency of the planet, and that they're going to control the world by controlling that energy source. And so, you know, it's always been follow the money, hasn't it? Follow the money, follow the control, and therein you get the power. And they keep the mind games going on all the while.
That's for sure. Well, the irony of it is that most of the... My original intention this evening before we... You alerted me to the presence of this interesting article, was to talk about the different investigators who had dabbled in these alternate energy fields. Not so much that I want to dig into their inventions per se, or even into their personalities, but the fact that the approach has been taken from at least a dozen different directions involving such a myriad of things such as mechanics, acoustics, electricity, you know, plasmas, all these various things. Mm-hmm. And yet the underlying principles are all pretty much related. And the thing that's so amazing about it is that it comes back to the stuff we've talked about together on some of your earliest shows, which is the difference between power and energy, the importance of bidirectional power flow, and all these different concepts. But the most intriguing thing is how different something can be made to be simply by leaving out a few words or by changing the context in which those words are delivered. And I'll give you an example, because this is one thing that I used to actually make money on when I was in high school. I went to a Catholic school, as you know, and it was an interesting experience. We'll leave it at that. But because of that, one of the things which was often quoted was that money is the root of all evil. And if you really look it up, it doesn't say that in the Bible at all. What it says is love of money is the root of all evil. And so, you know, the reason I bring that out at all is simply because of the fact that there's a difference of a couple of words changes the entire complexion of that message. Mm-hmm. And the reason I even use that as an example is because we actually have a very similar situation involved in one of the cornerstones of all physics, and that is the conservation of energy law. You know, if you ask most people to quote that, they will say, oh yes, of course, energy can neither be created nor destroyed, and they let it go at that. But the interesting thing about it is there's a second half to that which is far more important than the first half. And what it says in its entirety is that energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but only changed from one form to another.
Or transformed, yeah. Yes.
Right. And so the reason that that's important is because if you really dwell upon its meaning, you're almost forced to ask the question, well, how many times can I do that?
Well, the answer would probably be endlessly.
Right. If your efficiency was high enough, you could do it over and over and over and over and over again. And you'd be mm-hmm. using the same energy over and over and over and over again, which is very, very interesting.
Yes.
And to be honest with you, this is one of the first plateaus of achievement that has to be understood and mastered for anybody that's attempting to get to these alternate energy devices or an understanding of how they could work.
Mm-hmm.
The secret is not only to have a high efficiency in what you are doing, but to be able to manage the transformation of energy, and I use that word very sparingly, but just to make my point, it's worth using. The management of the transformation of energy from one form to another and then back to its original form for reuse. And you don't really need to be overly bright to understand that if I have a conversion efficiency of 99% such that I only lose 1% in moving from one energy form to another in some particular operation, that if I choose to use that energy over again, I'm only going to lose another 1%. Well, I can do that 100 times with that original parcel before I have to reload, so to speak. And that's a far, far cry from what we're taught, you know, that essentially you get one shot each time you go around. In other words, if I power a light bulb with 100 watts, you know, then I have to continuously throw 100 watts at it from the source simply because the belief is that that 100 watts is now converted to light, which has left the electric circuit and is no longer accessible. And so it becomes an endless one-way trip. But that's not what the law says. That's not what the law implies you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, why are we trapped in this regime from which there's no escape? And the only answer that I can come up with is, and there's a lot of evidence to support this, I might add, that that's where they want you to be.
Yes. In the context of what you just described, would improvements in induction or convection methods change that? In other words, if you could transform the energy that normally would be considered loss, the loss, even if it's 1%, and since it's not destroyed, it's only transformed, if you could transform that back and reintroduce it into the circuit, in other words, or into the application, then technically you would eliminate loss.
Well, you would certainly change the limits or the border line that define what we now recognize as the limits of efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's something which I have argued about for years. The whole concept of the Dynaflux alternator, which I think we talked about in depth on a couple of shows,
yes,
was to do exactly that. You transform a certain amount of power into magnetic and electric energies, and part of that is used to do useful work, and then the entire procedure is reversed, and then it's literally transformed back again into mechanical power where it's stored and reused, and that goes back and forth as a separate underlying oscillation on its own, while the overall process appears to just continue to be taking energy from the line. But what's really interesting about it is that when you show people this on instruments, you know, they cannot conceive of the fact that the power can reverse its direction. Why? I don't know. But it's really a very simple procedure. And the only thing is, if you have a true RMS wattmeter that's looking at the power actually taken from the line versus the power that appears in the load, and let's say you see a 4-to-1 ratio there. Well, people say, well, how is it possible that you can have 4 times the power that you're taking from the wall doing work in the load? Where's it coming from? You can't create power. But that's not what's happening. And, you know, it's an assumption that people go on simply because of the fact that for some reason they lack the mental facility to recognize an extra dimensionality is being used. And, you know, that seems to be the key issue. We are taught in such a way that we're not only taught to ask certain questions, but we are taught that those questions have a limited number of answers. And that's in itself a wrongdoing, because if you look to the universe as your teacher rather than what's in the textbooks, and I'm not devaluing what's in the textbooks. I mean, I use that stuff every day. But what I'm saying is that there are limitations inherent in that, which can be circumvented or augmented, perhaps, with direct influx of knowledge from a higher source. Who are you going to trust, the being that designed the universe or some college professor that wrote a textbook?
Well, the word infinity comes to mind, number one, and that opens up a barrel full of possibilities, if not more. So, you know, while you're talking, I'm picturing two things in my mind. We have the oil companies telling us that we're running out of oil, which is a lie. It's the opposite. The fields have replenished themselves. They've self-replicated and they're full. And then the other thing, and while that's going on, they're raising the price, right? Which is blackmail and extortion. And then on another level, you have the people that invest the dollar. You were talking about getting more than what you're putting into it. Well, you invest the dollar in the lottery, you can win $100 million. Of course, you know, they're going to take half of it in taxes and whatever, but the point is you're getting a lot more than what you're putting into it. And you're describing the same principle. It's just that most people don't really feel they're going to win the lottery when they invest that dollar. They know the odds of it are quite slim. Yet what you're describing is quite predictable and not at in any way subject to the same odds.
Well, that's true. And the irony of it is that I have a sneaking suspicion, and I have really thought this through carefully, and I'm pretty convinced I'm right, that the people who run the world, let's use that term, are not only aware that there are laws to this effect in the universe, but they have concentrated on applying those laws not necessarily to physics and to the development of more benign energy sources, but rather to the application of finance. And the reason I tell you this is really very interesting. Our whole physics is really based, in a traditional sense, on the catabolistic cycle of nature, where things go from a sense of order to a sense of disorder. They fall from a high to a low. They go from a hot to a cold. You know, all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the irony of it is, everybody will say to you, "Oh, well, of course. Did you ever see a cup of coffee that's ice cold warm itself up? Or, you know, did you ever see a shattered pane of glass reassemble itself?" Those things don't happen. You know, that would be against the so-called laws of nature. Well, the interesting thing about it is that there is negative entropy in nature if you look for it. As a matter of fact, Ilya Prigogine won the Nobel Prize not too many years ago for his investigation into self-ordering systems. And the mere fact that they can be proven to exist tells you that there's also an anabolistic side of nature. In other words, another half of the cycle where things behave in the opposite way.
Yes, so, or in the reverse direction, you're saying. Yes.
Yeah. And so actually, down through history, those people who have had the insights like Tesla, which we were talking about earlier, of tapping into this other half of the cycle, they are reaping the rewards, if you will, of a higher consciousness, and trying to share that with the rest of the world. And the rest of the world is so busy telling you, look, there's no other side of the cycle. This is where things are at right here. This is where you got to stay. That they won't even look at some of those things, never mind make use of them. But here's the point I was trying to make with this little departure. Wilhelm Reich tried to talk about the fact that there is a negative side to the energy flow picture. And one of the best pictures that he painted with this concept was his cloud-busting device,
yes,
which was used to alter the weather and do all sorts of interesting things. And the point is that we are so used to thinking about a charge, let's say, that flows from a high to a low, that we don't realize that his device did the opposite. It was something that flowed from a low to a high. So it was like a reverse gradient type of an effect. Well, once you master that simple thought, whether you believe in it or not doesn't really matter so much. Just understanding what it is that people are talking about when they talk about negentropic experiences. Here's a situation where something moves from a level that we would call primal or base level to a higher energy state and does it by itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's what gets stuck in everybody's craw. Yet, interestingly enough, how many times does our own language remind us that this process is not only well entrenched, but has been in use for thousands of years? We have an expression that says, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Well, the rich getting richer represents an uphill flow, of potential. It's like a battery charging itself. The flow of money, goes uphill to the wealthy. Now, why is there no problem in accepting that concept? I think part of the reason is that that these people have been aware of the other side of nature for thousands of years, and one of the best kept secrets in the whole business is how those concepts are applied to financial matters, because by engineering the planet in such a way to cater to that situation, you notice that the money flows uphill into their coffers. They don't have to work for it. They simply open the safe door every morning and watch the money flow in. Now, if it can be done with finance, and if it's truly representative of a law of nature, then what the heck is the big problem about investigating the possibility of it happening in other realms?
Mm-hmm.
Like physics, mechanics, acoustics, optics.
Yes.
You know.
Well, I agree with you on the issue of Reich's, and you're speaking about the orgone generator and then the accumulator. Now, I have built both, and I use them for eliminating chemtrails, but it enhances many other things, too. And it actually is the kind of energy that the negative, the dark side energies can't stand, because it's the opposite. Once that door energy or that destructive orgone is accumulated into the device, it transforms it into positive orgone. And they can't stand being around positive orgone energy. It is so foreign to them. Another thing that came to mind while you were talking is, and you alluded to it in the concept of wealth accumulation, when one sets a goal, one is operating purely in the etheric level until it becomes a mental process, a thought form, and then one takes action. So you're putting an invisible concept into motion and manifesting something in a physical reality. That's what life is. That's what experience is. And so we all have that ability. And then thirdly, I'd like to mention my first crystal radio. And I think I was maybe 5 or 6 years old, and I had gotten a kit and built a crystal radio. And I was amazed that you could just attach the little alligator clip to the rail of the garage door, for example, and that there was enough metal there, there was enough of an antenna there to pull in the signal with no power source. So that concept is very practical. In fact, there's a lot right to be said in the crystal, and that a 5-year-old could put something together like that. And of course it worked. I used to listen to the weekend sporting events, you know, college football or whatever, you know, I was interested in.
Absolutely. And I built those simple type radios too. And it's just interesting that the basis upon which they function has been so immersed in the onslaught of solid state devices and high tech electronics and what have you. There's very few people that even realize about, you know, the origins of crystal radio sets. I mean, we used to make Galena detectors out of a piece of crystal and a pencil lead and a safety pin and pick up signals just from that. Because of the fact that, in a sense, it's a macroscopic transistor.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about it is that, I mean, you can get so steeped in the doctrine, or perhaps the better word would be the dogma of all this stuff, that you forget that the underlying principles are really very simple. And I think that that's in itself something which is reoccurrent in the universe. I think that most of the truths upon which great ideas are built are always simple. And then, you know, as they evolve, their complexity becomes more pronounced because of refinements and because of specific applications. But the basic ideas are really very simple. And that's probably true of all aspects of nature. I think everything you choose to focus on is probably an inverted pyramid. And at the very bottom, where the point is the simplest of truth. And everything that's built above it is just a hierarchy of improvements and complexities that are heaped on the original concept for various purposes. But at the bottom is a simple thing. And that seems to me to be, I mean, even the Hindus and the Buddhists and the people who study Oriental philosophy and yoga and things like that are always talking about the calm at the center of the circle, but the ultimate point from which everything flows appears to be nothing more than a singularity. You know, it's the same basic concept repeated over and over again, and apparently it holds truth in all of its manifestations. And so, you know, even though we're in this incredibly complicated age where we're capable of producing technological miracles every day, it does all of us good to eventually seek the lowest common denominator just for the sake of purifying our souls and our minds and realizing that, you know, underneath all this gibberish that's become the hallmark of the halls of academia, there are really very simple principles. And if you want to find out more of nature, then look for the simple principles that uphold what you're trying to investigate. You know, there was this German naturalist, Schoberger, Victor mm-hmm. Schoberger, and he made some of the most profound discoveries in this century, as far as I'm concerned, because they had to do with all kinds of things, from hydrodynamics, which are totally unknown, the release of other energy forms, and all of this sort of thing. And he started out simply as a game warden with some time on his hands, who decided to study the fish and the streams and the waterfalls and whirlpools and things like that that he encountered in his everyday environment. And he went on then, in his older years, to express these understandings in terms of actual technologies. But what did he really do? He got the basics from nature. And isn't that where everything comes from? I mean, are we so blind that, or so egotistical that we forget that anything and everything that man decides is his own, he has really stolen from the world around him, and it was all invented and perfected by a much higher being.
Well, you're describing our origination from source, and that through this experience of life, actually, the lesson to be learned is how to get back to that source. And so it would only be make common sense or would only be the wisest decision to recognize the oneness of all things and focus your efforts on returning to that. Here it's based upon division and separation. Everything. They divide the people, they divide the thinking, every experience we have is made into a confrontation between two opposing teams. Be it politics, exactly. Sports, education, religion, whatever. Everything is designed to separate us, not only from the source, but from each other, in the effort to keep us from doing what would be natural. And I think that's where we have to turn. We just have to turn in the other direction. Hold our noses, and so we get rid of the stench going into our nostrils and just head in the other direction.
Well, it's interesting you should say that. Carini used to say all the time that if you want to improve something, you just have to learn to see it in reverse. Everything that he tried to do was to look at things and turn it around to see it the other way. And he wasn't always right, but it was an amazing thing that he had that insight, because that's really quite applicable to some of the greatest problems we have in the world today. I was just talking today to a friend of mine. Well, actually, you know who he is. I had mm-hmm. dinner with Randy tonight.
Okay.
And we were talking about how absurd it is to support huge military budgets all the time. You know, if nobody was fighting, what would you need them for? You know, it's like...
Well, they provoke the fights so that you need them. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
That's the point people aren't getting.
Yeah. I know, it's amazing. It's like building the Eiffel Tower so you can put a red light on top so the planes won't hit it.
Mm-hmm.
It's backwards. By the way, did you hear that Japan recently signed a new treaty in which they promised that they will never go to war again with anybody for any reason?
I hadn't heard that, no.
Well, I only heard about it the other day from a friend of mine, and I would love to get to the bottom of that one, because if that's true, that's pretty amazing.
Now, who did they sign that treaty with?
I don't know. I don't know the details, you know, otherwise I would tell you. But if there's even a fragment of truth in that, that's an amazing thing. And it should become a blueprint for every other nation on this planet.
Well, there's got to be some end to the madness and the chaos, and it is being undone. You're not hearing about it in the mainstream media, but there are... great advances being made in the exposure of the rampant corruption that's going on, and the world is at a point right now where they're just I think we're behind here in the United States in terms of consciousness. People are so attached to the boob tube that they just, that's their reality. And anything outside of that little box with the glass face on it is really not even worth paying attention to, unless they're backed into a corner and they realize that that there's more going on and they should have been paying attention. The rest of the world knows what's going on in America more so than Americans do, more so than the average American. And that's a sad state of affairs. But at the same time, with their consciousness of what's going on, they're collectively deciding that they're not going to tolerate what this government is doing. And so those of us who want to see change and who intend and will see change come about in this country are thinking like those overseas who see these things, whether it's about a gold standard, above-the-board financing. People are tired of getting ripped off. People are tired of wars, and there really has never been a justification for a war on this planet, other than someone trying to take something that belonged to someone else. It's always been greed. It's always been one's individual gain over that that belonged to another. And it's in God's word that is not to be tolerated. And what do? They make laws excusing themselves, laws that bind us up while they break them. I mean, this is insanity. And it is being handled not as rapidly as you and I would like to see, and probably most of the listeners to this show. However, it is being handled. And so as it's being exposed to the light, you sort of like the vampire at the end of the vampire movie, you know, when the sun comes up and he's either going to self-incinerate, you know, spontaneous combustion, or he's going to melt or just decay. That's kind of what's happening to the government right now. They're just trying to grasp for straws, basically. That's really what's going on. That doesn't.
I can live with that.
Yeah, doesn't come from the mainstream though. But you heard it here first, folks. That's what's going on. So, in terms of energy or power or things that we depend upon for a higher quality of life, I know that it's been years and years and years, people. You and I have talked about this ad nauseum. There have been people that have invented all sorts of wonderful things to make life easier and less expensive and really give us more free time to enjoy our lives. They would not have that. I mean, slavery is what it is. And whether most of us recognize it or not, we are on a prison planet right now. You're a slave, and if you don't comply with the game, the rules of the game, they want to either imprison you or just eliminate you. And yeah, what gives them that authority? I mean, that's...
Well, it's like so many forms of authority. It's just usurped. It's been
yes.
taken. But that doesn't mean that the people can't take it back. It's just a question of, you know, whether they really have the gumption to do it or not. You know, the founding fathers designed this nation to reflect principles that they believed were inflexible, God-given rights.
Mm-hmm.
And if we believe that those are, in fact, still in place, and if you have the intelligence to realize that we have been wronged, progressively wronged, and incessantly wronged for at least 120 years, possibly longer, it might be a good time to start to reverse the process. Because we are on a downhill spiral. You can see it. I mean, I have seen the changes in morality. I've seen the changes in consciousness. I've seen the changes in the behavior of people. Even it's even reflected, Don, and I've noticed this in a very sad way, because I grew up in an era where architecture was something to be really proud of and learn something from. And in the older times, architecture had spirit, it had soul, it reflected a certain spiritual level of development. And now it's stark, it's bleak, it's only functional, it's lacking beauty. I mean, these are all of the things that are an outward expression of what we've degenerated to. And why have we degenerated to this level? Simply because of the fact that, you know, as you pointed out, people are enslaved. I think they realize it on a certain level, but they're fed with that nonsense about the land of the free since they're 2 years old, and they don't want to give up that image. So it's kind of a form of denial. But you and I both know that it's very simple to find out just how free you are. All you got to do is test the walls of the prison. How much can you do before somebody comes down on you with a hammer?
Mm-hmm.
Not really much.
Well, the last line of the national anthem is, "O'er the land of the free and the home of the brave." When you keep telling people that they're the home of the brave, they feel that there's nothing more to be brave about. It's almost a foregone conclusion. They should change it to the land of the enslaved and the home of the chickens. And that would be the reality we have today. Or the land of the ignorant, and leave it at that. You know, of course, I'm being a bit sarcastic when I say that. You know, I'll get those people that, how dare you attack the national anthem? That's not what I'm saying. It's, we don't even think about what the words are saying.
Right.
You know.
Well, the same is true with the Pledge of Allegiance. How many people really know what they're saying, if they even say it at all?
Yes.
Because in there, what do we talk about? A republic, not a democracy.
That's true.
We ought to have a whole show sometime, Don, just on outlining the difference between a democracy and a republic.
Would you like to do that next week?
I don't know if I have enough time to research it in 1 week, but I'll tell you what, I really would like to do that sometime.
Or we can do it in a couple of weeks.
That is the hinge pin of so much, you know, and the irony of it is, there's a joke going around in the freedom circles, which says, how do you define democracy? Well, it's really very simple. Six wolves invite a sheep to dinner, and then they take a vote on who's going to be eaten.
Yeah, that I've heard that one before. Yeah. Or they decide what the menu's going to be.
Yeah.
Same principle, yeah. Well, you know, when you're dealing with people, and you know, people are not to be put down. You know, we're not putting down those that are asleep. They're, you know, it's like you and I have talked about this before. The people that are asleep and don't see what's going on are the ones that are lying in bed when their alarm goes off. And they, you know, the night before they say, hey, if you hear my alarm go off and I don't get up, make sure I'm up because I have to be at work or I lose my job. So you wake that person up. Yeah, I'm getting up. You go to work, and then you get a call at work and they're asking if you'll write some kind of an excuse for them. You know, so that they can try to salvage, you know, their own incompetence, their laziness, and keep their job. In other words, they're always looking for a scapegoat or somebody to bail them out instead of taking the responsibility on their own shoulders and doing that. So those people that were trying to wake up to these things, they're here for their experience, and you know, we're just observing how they are or what they're doing, not judging them. They're not going to help change the matrix anyway. So,
don't forget, it was only 6% of all the citizens in the colonies that wound up being responsible for the Revolutionary War. Mm-hmm. The rest of them just either remained loyal to the king, or they said, well, we'll wait and see how it turns out, and then we'll go with the winning side, you know.
Yeah.
So even though the numbers might be small, it doesn't mean that they have to be ineffectual.
Well, it's been determined that you can change any kind of paradigm with 5% of a different consciousness. 5% is all it takes. So you're in a country of some 300 million people, it only takes 15 million people to wake up. That's all. That's not many.
No, that's not too bad. No.
And, but you have
to. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you all have to be focused on the same issue. You know, you all have to have the same intention, of course. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I was going to say that I think that if we keep that number in focus, you realize that between the tax issues, all the corruption in Washington, all the other things that are going on in this country, the opposition to war in general, and the changing feelings in the various religious circles, I think that there is a rumbling and there is an awakening going on. And the only question is, how fast is it going to propagate? And as you pointed out, are they all complaining about the same thing? Or do we have another form of diversification in that it's going to be a subjective determination as to what's more important to this one or that one as to where the entire group places the emphasis. But at least something's changing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the ultimate solution is us recognizing who is doing what, okay, to us. Who is it that's doing this to us? Okay, and I've been writing about that, and you will see soon, within a week or so, you'll see another piece of my journalism and my research, my investigative research, that comes out clearly showing us even more who's behind this, with more definity and more proof, more documentation. So we have to be able to face the truth and make concrete decisions about how we're going to change it. You know, the old saying, the fish stinks from the head down. When a fish starts to decay, the first thing to stink is the head. And that's the same with governments. It's absolutely the same thing.
Well, I think you pointed out something really valid and interesting, and it reminded me of an experiment that was done at Duke University back in the early 60s. And as you know, they were experimenting with such things there as psychic phenomenon, cognizance, and what have you. And one of the things that they did was they would take a primate, like a chimpanzee was a popular client for this sort of thing, and they put him in a cage, and they would have a creature of annoyance. I don't know what they used, but let me use the bumblebee.
Politician.
Yeah, but they use the bumblebee as an example, okay? And that when the bee stings the chimp, you know, he takes his wrath out on the bee. If he catches it, he'll tear the wings off, he'll bite the head off, and he's very glad that he got rid of the source of his antagonism.
Mm-hmm.
Now you take that same ape and you put him in a situation where you have a whole series of little ports in the cage that he can't see. And every time he's looking the other way, a little port opens and a compressed air thing fires a BB at him, and then the little portal closes. So now he's in constant agitation, and the psychology is very, very obvious. He knows he's being screwed around with, but he can't locate the enemy. And as a result of that, his anxieties turn inward, and he becomes, you know, complacent, depressed, all of the adjectives that define modern society. And that's part of the problem we have today. People know they're being screwed with. They're not stupid. The problem is they can't figure out who the enemy is. They can't recognize the bee, so they can tear its wings off and beat it into the soil. You know, they don't know who the enemy is. And I think one of the things that they ought to start doing is looking at the man behind the curtain, as it is, as we say in the parallel of a Wizard of Oz scenario.
Yes.
And, you know, it's going to be whoever you least suspect. That's always the way it is. So in our society, if we really feel that there's no way the government can be responsible for all these miseries, then
maybe you should look a little.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That's where you.
That's exactly what I did. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I know your methodology, and I think it's amazing that you've come up with the things you have. You must have a really, really highly developed sense of intuition for doing that kind of research.
Yeah, I do. You know, it goes back to what you and I were discussing a little while ago when we were talking about going back to source. You see, I will give the credit to God for that, okay? I will give the credit to the Creator for that, and that the Creator in his wisdom, for whatever reason, has chosen me and acknowledged that I'm willing to do that, and in the process has bestowed those gifts. He's bestowed that vision and the analytical ability to connect the dots of a jigsaw puzzle that's been hit by a train wreck. And I'm able to not just find all the pieces, but put them together and actually do it and make it look almost like the original. And that's what works. That's what works. You see, these people were not perfect in their corruption. They left trails and they made lots of mistakes. And so it's like Tesla may have known things that were going to work without being able to explain how or why. And maybe he spent the majority of his time coming up with ways to explain it to people. And that's kind of what I'm doing with my research, although I'm not a Tesla. And it's applied in a different area. But I look forward to the day when I can use that creative energy in a more positive way. Right now, I don't think there's anything more positive than undoing this paradigm and helping everyone get out of this matrix. That's what they don't want to happen. That's what they really never counted on. They never really calculated that. They just can only try to throw more obstacles in the way. But they can't stop it. And if they were to try to stop me, there are others that'll pick up the slack. The doors are, you know, the way has been shown, so to speak.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also think that the more they tighten the screws, the more obvious their presence is going to become. And that's part of what they did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think back to the way things were in the 50s, they were really doing pretty much all the same things as they're doing now, but they were doing it to a lesser degree.
It was subtle.
They were subtle, and the people didn't mind because they thought they were helping a good cause with taxes and all the other gibberish that's heaped on us. But as the time went on and they began tightening the screws because of greed, and sooner or later, some people, the ones that have, you know, higher consciousness and more guts than the rest of us, decided, hey, you know, this isn't right, and I'm going to look into it. And when one or two people do it, that's nothing. But when 1 or 2 million people start doing it, that's really something. And as I understand it right now, the tax rolls are suffering because of the fact that there are about 25 or 30 million people that have come to the realization that they don't have to pay taxes. It's all a fraud. So they decided not to pay. And you notice that they don't put 20 or 30 million people in jail. So I don't know exactly what's happening in that direction, but let's hope that that line of thinking propagates into other areas and people begin to really examine what's going on instead of just blindly stumbling along.
Well, there are only so many ways you can put on a straitjacket, and there are only so many straitjackets to go around right now, okay? And that's something for the listeners to think about, what that even means. The insanity, I'm referring to the amount of insanity that's going on. These people are so deluded that they think that this will never catch up with them. In fact, they're meeting right now, as I referred to at the top of the show. They're meeting in secret right now, planning what their next move is going to be. But things, as they ramp them up, they force us to become that much more conscious. And I can tell you, I'm becoming conscious much faster than they're ramping things up on my own level. On my own level. So I've got it figured out what they do. And that will be something I will continue to share with people. And that opens the door. The more I do that, the more it opens up the door for people like yourself to have their brilliant ideas come to the forefront, finally, for the benefit of mankind.
Well, the interesting thing about that is that the universe is very patient, and I think that those inspirations will always be floating around in the ether. But I would really love to see some of those ideas crystallized during my lifetime. Simply for the fact that, A, they are very well needed now, and B, it would certainly give me a certain type of satisfaction that I could never achieve with any other form of enjoyment. So let's keep striving for that and realize that we do have the opportunity to succeed, but if for some reason we don't, I'm confident that in the future others will. Because this battle's been going on for a long time, you know. And the forces of light against the forces of darkness is not exactly something new. You can read about it in the Sumerian texts, for goodness sakes, which predate ancient Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not exactly a new thing. The problem is that every time we get to the point where we could obliterate the dark side, or at least put it in its place, there seems to always be a natural calamity or a giant war or something that seems to set the whole process back for another cycle. And let's hope that that doesn't happen in this particular go-around, because I think the Earth itself is weary of all this. And that's the one thing that people don't really reckon on. But if you stop and think about it, in your own lifetime, Don, let's just say since the 50s, you cannot deny that the weather patterns are different, the earthquakes are increasing, volcanic activity is changing. You know, the planet can easily get to the point where it's the one that determines what happens next. And if old Mother Earth says enough is enough, if you think Katrina was something, or the most recent earthquake in China was something, how would you like to experience tectonic activities that involve two-thirds of the planet's surface and winds exceeding 1,500 miles an hour and a shift in the poles and flooding with waves 3 to 6 miles high? I don't think it would take very long for old Mother Earth to really sweep the place clean and start over. And we should keep that in mind, because this planet, whether we like it or not, is a conscious being, and it's going to respond to the general attitude and to the average psyche of the beings that are upon its back.
Or the mean consciousness, if you want to call it that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
The mean consciousness.
Yeah.
And by the way, the mean consciousness is surprisingly low.
Yeah. I think you've referred to it on past shows as something like 1/8 the IQ of a moron.
I don't remember, but that sounds reasonable.
Yeah, that's pretty low. But that's where it is. I would agree with you. I've heard enough archives. You said that on more than one occasion. But 1/8 the IQ of a moron could figure out what's going on, I think you've said.
Oh, I don't mean to sound condescending, but the fact of the matter is that, we are ultimately responsible for what goes on. You know, it's just like if you're responsible for, if you have a garden, you're responsible for the condition of the plants therein. And if you have goats or sheep or horses or dogs or whatever, you're responsible for them. Well, you can expand that understanding to a larger territory and realize that we human beings are responsible for a lot more than we want to somehow acknowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really true. Look what we're doing in this place. I mean, look at the condition of the oceans. Look at the condition of the water. The soil is destroyed. The air is polluted. There's all manner of things wrong. And it, no matter how you look at it, and it doesn't matter who you are, how rich you are, or whatever, no excuse really covers it. We did it.
Mm-hmm.
And
Mother Earth, this
planet can be very judgmental, man. You know, I don't know what people believe about past cycles on this planet, but I can tell you one thing. You know, there was a condition on this planet during the time of Atlantis which is very, very parallel to what we have now. And Atlantis wasn't just one little city or one little island or one continent. It was a global state, just like we have today. It had colonies all over the world. It had communications and transportation to all sorts of areas around the planet. And there's lots of ancient stuff surviving that attests to that fact. And when it went out, it took everything out with it and put us all back in the Dark Ages for another 15,000 years or whatever it was. And
well,
so,
it became a threat to the rest of the universe, too.
Oh, absolutely, and that's my point. There are very, very strong parallels between what's happening now and what happened then. And, in those days, there was actually a combination of things that occurred. You know, the Great War between Atlantis and India, which was completely on the other side of the world from Atlantis, and that there was all manner of hell and damnation that occurred over that conflict. But nature intervened and said, hey, enough is enough. And now there is no Atlantis. And it happened very quickly. And same thing can happen now. It really can. There are mechanisms, which I'd be happy to discuss, because I spent years looking into them, you know, that can be triggered by any number of things and cause a real rearrangement of this planet. And it will happen in a matter of hours. And the death toll will be far greater than you could ever imagine. So,
well, we should talk about that next week. Should make that a discussion for next week's show.
We can do that. I can put that together very easily.
And then that'll give you some time to work on your other project.
Yeah, I'll be happy to do that.
Okay. Well, Jim, we're out of time. We went over a little bit tonight, but I'm sure everyone enjoyed it. I hate to just cut it off because you and I can go for hours.
And we have.
It has been very enlightening as usual. And so I look forward to having you back again next week at the same time, God willing, if this place is still around. We make it through another 7 days.
If we don't, I'll make you a promise that as soon as radio is reinvented, I'll be back.
All right. And I'll have a show. How's that?
There you go.
All right, Jim. Well, you take care. Have a good night, a good weekend, and a good week. And we'll talk again next Friday, if not sooner.
Yeah, I'll try and talk to you sooner than that, because if we're going to cover that topic, then we have to do it in synchronicity. So I'll call you during the week.
Okay. Very good. Okay, folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. And our special guest tonight was scientist, author, inventor, lecturer, and teacher, and my co-host on Fridays, Jim Murray. And he'll be back with us again next week. Wish everyone a great weekend. We have some great shows lined up for you next week. You want to make sure and tune in. If you haven't read any of my investigative journalism, please go to directlightproductions.com and just click on the articles page. Some interesting things about some of the political candidates. A new article coming out soon by mid-month in the Idaho Observer. Also, check out hempusa.org. Go to their website. There are a lot of interesting food products there for you. Storable food, food that's made by God for use. And it's unaltered. It's not modified in a way that it's a drug, number one. There's no THC in it. Very healthy for you and life-giving. And so Hemp USA is a new sponsor of Evident Footprints. Meantime, I'd like to thank Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the audio, and now Marcella. I'm so happy to have Marcella doing a great job on the show. And in the meantime, I want to wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.
Details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone. and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.